2 years time. You have to wait for Padmasuri's husband to come relative. Oh, yeah. Oh. Where's the notes? Huh? Oh, okay. Yeah, pass it on. Pass it on. No, never mind. The other booklet? Oh, with me, ah? Oh, in our house, ah? Wow, gao la liao. Because I came by Brother Sulun's car. So, I only got these few copies. Never mind. Then you all just share or whatever you have, you just have it first. Huh? Yeah, Engbi will be coming, yeah. She will bring the rest. The notes is here. Yeah. But there is this very nice booklet that Brother Tio has helped us to print through the Kayanamita Fund. So you use these notes first, distribute to all. Then later on, the next Thursday when I bring this, it is more easy for you to keep. That A4 paper, the same note. But this one, Brother Teo has helped to put a cover page, a title, Understanding Lying Down Meditation. So it's in a very nice booklet form. This topic has been discussed in the Sunday class, Tuesday class, so now we are doing it in the Thursday class. But even though it is from the same note, the topic that is discussed is basically the same, but I approach it from different approaches. Then I emphasize and stress on different things at different places. So if you want to fully understand this very important topic, you have to listen to the other two earlier on Tuesday class recording and the Sunday class recording. I had sent them out through the Mahayanamitas. Yeah, Sadhu, yeah. Yeah, same one. Yeah. Those who still need a copy of the notes, you can collect from here. Anybody still don't have the notes? Okay, 8:10, we can get ready for puja. So tonight, who you all want to invite to light the candle and the incense? Oh yeah, Felix Heaven, Sui Kong, the two new ones. Okay, come. Help to light the candle and the incense so that we can proceed with the puja offering. But you have to off the fan, push it down. Just push the thing down. Push it all the way down, 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 down. Okay, thanks. Okay, you all can stand. Okay, good. Ah, sad. sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Put it on the tray, put it on the tray. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. We pass it around. Make offering to the Buddha, then we pass it around. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Pass it on. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. 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 Sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, 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 sadhu, sadhu. Okay, thank you so much. You can be seated. then we will start the puja chanting. Okay. Compose your mind, develop the saddha, the faith in the Buddha and his teaching. Calm and compose your mind. Then we will pay respect mindfully. Yeah? We will chant the Thai tradition. Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, you can be seated and turn to page 4 of the chanting book. We will chant the Vandana. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Panatipata Vairamani Kapadang samadhiyami, adina dana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, kamesu micchacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, Sura meraya maja pamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. We shall now chant the Padipa Puja, offering of likes. Ganda sarapaditena dipena tamadangsina tiloka dipang sambuddhang Pujayami tamonudang ganda sambarayutena dopenahang suganghina pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bacana mutamang vanda ganda gunopetang etang kusumasantatin Pujayami Muninjasa Siripada Sarorohe Pujemi Buddhang Kusumena Nena Punnena Matena Cha Hotu Mokhang Pupang Milayati Yata Idang Me Kayo Tata Yati Vinasabhavang Adivase tu no bante, paniyang parikapitang, Anukampang upadaya patikan hatu mutemang. Then the page 18, we will do the puja aspiration basing on the understanding of the significance of all this puja offering. Understanding the significance of light, we will make the following aspiration. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness of ignorance therein. Understanding the significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fire of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition as soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free Nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. By the power of this merits born of this offering, may our spiritual faculties, Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya, be further strengthened until they become balas, or powers. Making sharing of merits and transfer of merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the conditions and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Give you pay respect, Triple Jap. Buddhang pucemi. Dhammang pucemi. Sanghang pucemi. Okay, you can be seated. Oh, okay. I think only Leslie's friend is new here. I give you this book. You go back and read. Oh, there's another one. Oh, what's her name? I give her this book. This is the book that explained to you the meditation and how to do it. It's very useful. So later on, when I give all this instruction, you just listen attentively and do. You don't try to remember, because they are all in the book. Then when you read through the book, you will understand why you do all these things. This is to enable us to save time, so that the newcomer, when they come, I don't have to repeat the whole thing. But I will still explain certain key basic things. So now we can off the light, if you want to, so that those who already know how to meditate, you can start your meditation. While the rest who are new, or you want to on the fan or not, the center fan, because otherwise, after a while, they can feel stuffy. okay. on the wall, facing the other side. yeah. okay, thank you. Okay, maybe I take a few minutes to just let those who are new to understand. You see, basically what we are doing here is we will have the first session, puja. After the puja, we will start our meditation. So meditation, for those who already know, they will go ahead. For those who are new, I will brief you a bit, then you will understand what we do. The training of the mind is very important, according to the Buddha. Most living beings who have not trained their mind, they are not able to meditate. Because, according to the Buddha, you can find out for yourself later on, there are five mental hindrances that hinders your mind from becoming peaceful, mindful, and aware within. This hindrance, they occur throughout the day. So if you have not trained your mind and you don't understand them, you will be affected by them. And this is the reason why living beings become heedless. They think a lot. They have a lot of these mental states, which the Buddha says, when they arise, it hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness and inner awareness. So this will prevent you or hinders you from becoming mindful, aware, peaceful. The five are called sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor. This one, the meaning is lethargic mind, sleepy mind. Then you have restlessness of mind. Then the last one is doubt. These five mental hindrances, when you go through life, you understand, especially the first two. Every moment of sense experience, when you see something or hear something, smell, taste, or tactile feel or think or something, you tend to have this tendency to react to what you see, what you hear. Pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. If it's something pleasurable, positive craving, then this sensual desire will arise. You want the experience to be repeated. Then through your conditioning, your memory, you will actually get lost in that particular sense desire or sense experience. Then your mind is preoccupied with all of the movement of that mental activity related to that sense experience. Then the craving, positive craving, will arise. That's why it prevents you from seeing things as they are, from experiencing reality, the moment. Your mind can only do one thing at a time. Either it's with the moment to be aware, with clarity, to understand what is going on, or you are busy thinking, lost in thought, heedlessly thinking, worrying, planning, reacting, emotional and all those things, or fearful. Then the second one is the direct opposite, you will, the state or sense experience that you don't like, the dislike for it, the unpleasant sense experience that you want to push away. So when you react in this way, it becomes habitual throughout the day. You will have a lot of like and dislike, and both these mental states are hindrance. It prevents you from becoming peaceful because one is positive craving, the other one is negative. Both also you don't like. The one you like, you attach, you want it repeated. So it also causes you to be distracted. The other one that you don't like also disturb your mind state. That's why you don't have the peace within, the clarity. And you are not peaceful because there is no mind that has this understanding to be at peace with every sense experience, every moment of activity within your living environment. The third one is sleepiness. When you develop meditation without understanding, you don't see the importance, you will become sleepy. Then you will not be able to do it very well or concentrate on it. The fourth hindrance is even worse. The mind becomes restless. And this one arises because when you live life without understanding, when you don't keep your precepts, you get yourself entangled in life. Then when you get into trouble, the mind will arise, the fear, the worry, the anxiety. the sorrow, the lamentation. And this will make your mind restless, especially when you have problems in life, like health problem, career problem, financial problem, relationship problem, or society-related police case problem and all those things. So your mind will have no peace because it becomes restless due to your fear, due to your worry, your anxiety, your unhappiness, your sorrow, and your lamentation. So this is a very powerful hindrance. So when you come and meditate, you got this problem, you cannot meditate. It will disturb you. Then the last one is doubt. When you are not confident of yourself, when you don't have a solution to something, you will have a lot of doubt. Then you worry more. So doubt is the lack of faith, lack of confidence. So these hindrances are very powerful. So the Buddha said, when you know these are the things causing you problem, you don't have to fight it, you don't have to suppress it, you don't have to control it when they arise. You just acknowledge it, allow it to be. Then develop the opposite five. This will help you overcome the mental hindrance. These opposite five are called spiritual faculties. Mind state that can allow you to understand spiritual teaching, that can overcome the five mental hindrances. The first one is faith or confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. This one is very important. When you have faith, you got no more doubt. Your mind is very calm and very composed. And when you understand who the Buddha is and how special his teaching is, you will have a lot of virya, the second spiritual faculty. Virya is a spiritual zeal or tenacity that will move you to develop this cultivation or practice of meditation that the Buddha has taught, where it can free your mind. It can liberate your mind and free you from all suffering. Then it can bring about transformation into inner peace, inner well-being, and the mind becomes very quiet, very peaceful, full of well-being, full of joy, full of happiness. And there's clarity for you to understand many, many things. So this understanding will drive you. Saddha, Virya, these are the first two spiritual faculties that will move you to develop the interest in this teaching. Then you will automatically learn to meditate, to develop the third spiritual faculty, which is sati or mindfulness. Mindfulness is very important. Mindfulness is the mind in fullness. Means fully aware without thought. The mind that is relaxed without thought. The moment you are not thinking, not verbalizing, not chattering, the moment you are silent, you are already aware. So when your mind and body move as one, you are aware. When you are silent, the moment you are without thought, you are already aware. So meditation is to learn to be quiet, peaceful, silent. Learn to allow this mind to be so that it will slowly settle down and become peaceful. Don't fight it. Don't react to it. Don't fear it. Don't try to verbalize. The more you verbalize, the more active the thought is, and it cannot be quiet. You cannot develop the meditation. Then when sati arises, this mind has got little or no thought. Then when it is in this state of silence, you need to stabilize it. Then it becomes samadhi. Samadhi is the firmness of mind, collectedness of mind, unwavering mind. At the moment of sense experience, when you have samadhi, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile, feel, or think, your mind will not waver because it's collected. It has samadhi. When it doesn't waver, it doesn't create sensual desire, you will. There is no light and dislike because it does not stir. The mind does not waver. Then from these two states, when you are mindful without thought and your mind is collected and unwavering, you can see things clearly. You can see things as they are, the reality. Not according to what your thought tell you, your conditioning tell you, your belief system tell you. According to reality. That's why you will develop what they call wisdom, the last spiritual faculty. So meditation is to have this. Then all this will clear. Then your mind become different. But human beings' problem is, before you develop this, the spiritual faculty, you are heedless, you think a lot. So our meditation, we will introduce two types of skillful means to help you train your mind to overcome the mental hindrance first, so that you can develop sati. Then our puja is to help you to develop the faith in the Buddha and his teaching. Then when you rejoice through the wholesomeness that you observe or you come to experience, sadhu, 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 the meaning means I rejoice with all the wholesomeness that people has done. When they have faith, they come and make offering, they develop generosity, then I also rejoice with their whatever generosity that they have developed. And with all this, it will bring about condition for you to develop this spiritual faculty of saddha leading to virya. Then when you do it mindfully, means when you hold on to the flower or the fruits or the offering item, you reflect on it, then you are mindful of it, then you rejoice. When you sadhu, you rejoice. That is also a meritorious action. And that will develop well-being, good mind state. It will train your mind to be more and more wholesome, less and less of this negativity. So all this is very conducive for you to develop mindfulness. Yeah. So when you do all this with understanding and mindfulness, when you rejoice, you will develop sati, which is awareness of what is going on, rejoicing with what is going on. And when you do this with mindfulness and awareness, you are training your mind. Even when you move your hand to receive the offering, then you make the offering to the triple gem, you rejoice, then you move over, you hand over, you do it mindfully. Then when you turn, you bend, you stretch, and when you have this joy inside, you experience it, you are mindful of it. That's why sati can be developed, the spiritual faculty through puja. Then after that, when we meditate, I will give you the instruction to decondition the heedless thinking, then to stabilize it so that there is inner peace, inner well-being. The inner well-being comes from loving kindness or metta, which has been described in the blue book. So now we will off the light. Yeah? Then we can start our meditation. Okay, just relax body and mind. Make sure you got a stable posture. You can sit, you just sit on the floor with your leg cross-legged. It can be half lotus, full lotus, or even stretch out. Whatever posture that can allow you to have a stable posture to develop the meditation, you can use it. You can even sit on a chair if you have problems sitting on the floor, or lie down against the wall. Stretch your leg, make yourself comfortable. Then make sure your backbone is straight. Then just breathe in, breathe out normally. Then relax body and mind completely. Then maintain awareness. Close your eye. Feel, don't think, just feel. Feel your forehead, feel. If you can detect any tension, any stress within, or any tightness, you just relax, relax, and relax them all. Feel the forehead soothingly relax, free of tension. For those who are more familiar with the 6R, you can, the moment you feel you detect any tightness or stress within, you recognize it. Then you release it. Release is like a relaxation. You relax into it. Yeah. Then you feel the whole thing soothingly relax. Then you move your attention down to your eye muscle. Do the same. Feel. Then relax into every muscle. Wherever there is any tension, any tightness or any stress within, you just feel it soothingly relax. Completely relax. Then you move this attention down to your facial muscle. Do the same. Strand by strand as you move down. Feel it soothingly relax, relax and relax. Then you can visualize yourself smiling. against the mirror. When you can smile, there is joy, there is happiness. When there is joy, you will relax naturally. And this will help you to relax your facial muscle even more. So when you visualize yourself radiating a radiant smile within the mirror, that radiant smile will actually de-stress you and bring about inner joy, inner peace, and inner well-being. Then you can radiate this loving kindness or metta by following what I recite. May I, this body and mind of mine, you must feel your body and mind, be well and happy, well and happy. You must feel the entire well-being and happiness within each and every cells of your physical body and our entire mind state. You can repeat this. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. You must feel it, feel the well-being and happiness in your entire body and mind, the entire being. Then after that, you continue to radiate this metta. May it too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May it too be free from all harm and danger. May its mind states too be without enmity, without ill will, or without any negative mind states of fear, worry, and anxiety. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within our hearts. Feel it, feel the inner peace, inner well-being, and inner joy. Then you can radiate this same loving kindness to all of your loved ones. Can be your parents, your brothers and sisters, your spouse, your children, and somebody that you adore or love very much. Could be your good friends. May all my loved ones too be well and happy, well and happy, free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May they all too be free from all harm and danger. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then you can radiate this same metta to all beings. May all beings within this vicinity of Subhangjaya and all Kayanamitas, known and unknown, seen and unseen, may they all too be well and happy, well and happy, free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then you can radiate this same metta to all the other beings within the entire existence. May all beings within the whole of Subhangjaya, Selangor State, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, Mother Earth, our solar system, our galaxy or Milky Way, then our entire universe. May all beings within the entire existence, known and unknown, seen and unseen, may they all too be well and happy. Well and happy. Free from all harm and danger. Free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they all keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. By now, you should be more calm and more peaceful. Then you can come back to your facial muscle, feel, don't think. Then you sweep it down to feel your neck, relax. Feel your shoulder, relax. Feel your hand, back to shoulder, relax every part. Then you move your attention down to your heart area or your chest area. Silence your mind and just feel. You can detect any vibration or your heartbeat. You just silence everything and stay there. Yeah. But if you are new, if you still do not have the sensitivity or the training of the mind, then what you can do is, like you feel your forehead, you relax into it. Yeah? So now you feel your heart area, your chest area, and you relax into it. Every part that you can feel any tension, any stress within, or any tightness, you just feel it soothingly relax. Then you move your attention down to your stomach. Do the same, silence your mind and feel. Then relax every part of your stomach. Then you move your attention down to your abdomen. Do the same, feel, don't think, just feel. Then relax into it. Then you move your attention to your leg. Do the same, feel, relax into it, don't think. Your buttock, do the same. Then you can reverse this whole mind sweeping method from the buttock to your leg. Feel, relax. Feel it soothingly relax. Then feel your abdomen, silence everything and feel. Like you feel your forehead, feel. Then relax into it. Then you move it onto your stomach. Do the same. Feel, relax. Chest area, silence everything. Feel and relax. Then you move your attention back to shoulder, hand, back to shoulder, neck. Then move it up, sweep it up to your facial muscle and do the same. Maintain the radiant smile, relax into it and feel it soothingly relax. When you can maintain the radiant smile, you are more relaxed. Your nature is more relaxed. So feel it. Then reverse the whole of this mind sweeping method until your eye muscle feel, relax them all. Then your forehead, do the same. If you want to repeat this process when you are at home, you can do it. But for the time being, we can move on because by now you should be relatively more calm, more peaceful. There is little or no thinking left. Then you got to stabilize this inner peace and inner well-being that you have developed. You can use a skillful means to anchor it, to stabilize it. The Buddha taught anapanasati, or mindfulness of the in and out breath. Anapana is in and out breath. Sati is mindfulness. So anapanasati is a meditative training to develop mindfulness of the in and out breath. So you silence your mind, you do the same. Instead of feeling your forehead, now you feel your breathing in front of your nostril. Yeah. Initially, if you want to just zero in on the nostril, you can, like some form of focusing there. It's okay, we can help you. Then you just breathe in, breathe out normally, until your mind, which is aware, can detect the breathing. Then like the Buddha said, breathing in, the mind is aware. Breathing out, the mind is aware. You just maintain attentiveness there and allow the mindfulness and the breath to move as one. If you are new, you may not be able to do it for long. Usually within split second, this mindfulness is gone. Your mind is already gone, wandering off, lost in thought, doing something else. But don't worry. You tell yourself, the untrained mind is heedless, it thinks a lot, it wanders off very fast. So you only need to acknowledge and accept this reality. Then train. Come back to your breathing in front of your nostril. Maintain mindfulness. Every time it wanders off, bring it back. Every time it wanders off, bring it back and stay there. if you do it long enough with enough patience, then this mindfulness will develop. The ability to be mindful of this in and out breath will develop. Then you will start to stabilize your meditation. For beginner, do expect this mind to wander off many, many times. Some book even mention it may even wander off a million times. But don't worry how many times. As long as you have not trained, it will wander off. Then you just bring it back. It's easier than training yourself to ride a bicycle. So if you are patient, this training will come about very fast. Some can get it within 5-10 minutes. So you just continue to train your mind. Develop this training. When you are able to do it, this mind will suddenly settle down to become very calm, very peaceful, and you will experience a type of spiritual calmness, which they call piti. Piti is a spiritual calmness, spiritual joy, born of mindfulness without thought. When you are mindful of anything within your body, this piti will arise. That's why the byproduct of meditation is very useful. First byproduct is this piti, spiritual joy, spiritual calmness, spiritual rapture. When you experience this mind state, you will like to meditate. You will feel very good. Then it will improve your immune system, your health, your inner well-being. So you continue to train. Then when you experience this piti, you just relax into it, silent everything. Don't try to know. Relax and silent. After a while, this piti will also transform and become more and more refined. Then you will experience another state, which they call sukha. Sukha is a very blissful mind state, much, much more refined than piti. And when you experience sukha, your mind becomes very blissful. And you will like that state. And people tend to attach to this blissful state. And every time they meditate, they look for this experience. Then it becomes attachment. For our case, we are not attaching to it. We are experiencing it. Then we develop the understanding to relax into it further. If you can go through it and relax into it, then it will transform further. From sukha, it will become pasati. Pasati is the silent mind, the tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind, when you are without thought, when the awareness has become so subtle, so peaceful, so quiet, like the breathing has become so subtle, little or no breathing, and yet the mind is still peaceful, aware, tranquil, still, and have the mindfulness. The mind has entered sati on its own. And that pasati is the meditative mind, the silent mind. So this is the mind that can meditate. Then after that, use that mind to meditate. Okay, now I will leave it to you to train your mind. Yeah? Then after that, in 10 to 15 minutes time, I will ring the bell. Yeah? Then after that, you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Okay. Okay. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have not, slowly, mindfully, come out of the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed. Then stabilize this mind state and use it to live life, to cultivate the daily mindfulness, which is the actual meditation. Okay, we will do the invocation to the devas. Turn to page 6. I will read the English translation, then we will get Engbi to help us to chant. Invocation to the devas. In the universe in their entirety, let the devas and deities come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and releases Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine.
Samanta Chakvalisu Achagachantu Devata Saddhammam Muni Rajasa Sunantu Saggamokkhadam Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta
Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Iti peso bhagava arahang samma sambuddho Vijacharana sampanno sugato lokavido Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Sattha deva manusana buddho bhagavati Swakato bhagavata dhammo Sanditiko akaliko Ehipaseko opanayiko Pachyatang veditabo vinohiti Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho Ujjupatipanno bhagavato savakasangho Nyayapatipanno bhagavato savakasangho สามีจิปฏิปันโนภะคะวะโตสาวกสังโฆยาติตังจัตตาริภุริสายุคานิอัตตปุริสภุกาลาเอสาภะคะวะโตสาวกสังโฆอาหุเนโยปาหุเนโยดักขิเนโยอัญจาลิกะระณิโยอนุตตรังปุญญเกตังโลกาสาติสาธุสาธุสาธุ Give will be respect to Triple Gem Betang Pujemi Damang Pujemi Sanghang Pujemi The Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha, the Triple Gem. So when we say Pujemi, means we bow low to pay our respect to the Triple Gem. Okay. Tonight, maybe I got something quite useful to share with you all. There is this book based on a transcript of the talk I gave in Klang, Samatha Vipassana Bhavana. Dated 24th April 2014. How many of you have not read this book? Oh, good. Means very few people have not read. The rest have read. Do you all develop much appreciation of what has been shared? This book is very, very good. Very important. So I will read certain part to you, which is very useful. For those who don't have this book, you may collect it on your way out of this. I think there are still some copies there. This was based on a talk that I gave in Klang. The title is Samatha Vipassana Bhavana. Bhavana is meditation in Pali. Samatha is a type of energy field concentration or absorption meditation, whereas Vipassana is mindfulness, insight-based meditation. So Vipassana, these two words, when you combine, it gives the full meaning, where we is the three characteristics of nature, the impermanent characteristic, suffering state, and non-self. Or in Pali, it's called Anicchang Dukkhang Anatta. Vipassana is to insight into these three universal characteristics. When you awaken to these three universal characteristics, the Buddha said the first thing that you overcome is self-delusion, sakkayaditti, a permanent unchanging entity that you believe is you, like a soul, or something that you can cling on to, hold on to, and say, this is me, this is I. Therefore, all this can be mine, or I can own them. It refers to the individual form and mind, the human being. The karmically conditioned out form and mind that you are having since birth until now. And most living beings, through delusion, they will believe this is what they are. That's why they have so much suffering, so much problem. The Buddha said the main problem or mean the cause of suffering come from this sakkayaditti, which is self-delusion, the conditioned one to grasp, to cling, to hold through craving. That is the cause of suffering. And craving is very powerful. There are three types of craving. The first type is kamatangha, which craving for sensual things, sensual craving, all of the materialistic things that you experience through your senses, all the things that you can perceive through what you see, what you hear, what you smell, taste, tactile feel, or thing. If you grasp and cling onto them, suffering will arise. If you believe that they are permanent, can be owned, can be possessed, then you will have suffering. So this delusion is very powerful. So this particular topic, which I shared while I was invited to the Klang Talk at Tiratana Center, NBC building, dated 24, 2014, April. Just for those who wants to know where I read from, we start from page 34, last paragraph. Suyan can get hold of a copy. You don't have the book, don't worry. On your way back, you can collect, or if you had at home, you go back and read. This one can help many, many people, because this is the very important understanding that you have to develop. And you can develop it when you develop this meditation with understanding, when you come to understand the Buddha's teaching clearly, especially through the meditation. You listen now. So when you develop the meditation with understanding, the key word is understanding. When you understand what you do, all this you will come to understand. This form and mind, which is the human being, will come to understand. Because you use this to meditate, understand? And this is not you. But when this mind realizes itself, it awakens. Then it develops the wisdom, the understanding. Then that nature within that is capable of the direct seeing via sati or mindfulness will understand everything. See? You only need to connect to this true mind, the true nature within. That's why the notes that I've given you just now in front of you. For those who just came in, don't have the notes, later on your way out, you can collect. Or when I have time to do the sharing, you can come and collect also. This note on lying down meditation is to teach you how to meditate to connect to your inner nature, the gateway to your inner nature. Then that nature within that is capable of the direct seeing via sati or mindfulness will understand. It will see things as they are, without words, without thoughts, without concept. Then it will awaken. And then after that, of course, it has to use words to communicate and to express them. Otherwise, the being, no need to say anything, because it understands and it doesn't need words. For words are only needed for communication, for expression, and for conceptualizing whatever that is needed for the living being to have an idea of what these things are. That's why idea is not the truth, not the reality. Yes, there's a book. You can pass to them. Then I asked them, do you have any question? Then there was one person who asked this question. I think it was Brother Danny. It's a very good question. He said, Brother Teo, thank you so much for the very enlightening talk. Now my question is, most of us here, I should say 99% are lay people. So we tend to fall into this category of heedlessness. And you have shared with us tonight here a lot of very good advices and Dhamma understanding. For those monks, the Sangha, maybe they will know how to practice and they can make it for us. Can you please help us? We are explaining to us how we all, as ordinary lay people, who are heedless most of the time, to also do it. So this is the question, What do you think? Do you think you stand a chance? No problem. Because if you understand, is not whether you are monk or not monk. It's whether you are serious about life or not. If you are serious about life, you are already a monk. Understand? You don't need the rope to make you a monk. That's why the lady who cannot ordain, don't be upset. You can ordain yourself by striving on your heedfulness. The moment you have the Dhamma, you are the Aryan disciple of the Buddha. You don't need ordination. Spirituality is about the mind, the awakening of the mind, the development of wisdom, the realization of Nibbana. So I will read to you my answer to him. Because there is a fallacy people tend to believe. During the early day, I remember, there are some of these people who used to discuss and tell me this. He said, we don't stand a chance. Then they asked why. He said, monk full-time also cannot do it. We only people got so much responsibility, so much problem. You think you stand a chance? Wow, he got this type of very strange ideology. Then I just smiled because at that time I already knew it can be done. So meditation is to be understood, because when you understand, meditation can be done in the midst of life while you are working, even as a housewife, as a career person, because meditation is life itself. Can be done anywhere, any place, anytime. And the domain of meditation is life itself, all over. That's why you don't have to wait till you renounce to meditate. You don't have to wait till you take leave to go retreat to meditate. You can meditate while you are at home, while you are going to work, while you are going about doing your household chores, or while you are working in the office, even while driving. While living life, in the midst of life, all this, you can develop meditation. The moment you have trained your mind, and the moment you are heedful, you are in a meditative state. A meditative state can be developed easily when you understand. That's why that note lying down, meditation is very useful. When you can do that, you can become mindful and heedful throughout the day. Then standing, sitting, walking, or lying down, your mind state is the same. Then whether you are living life or you are resting, your mind state is the same. It's fully aware, mindful, heedful. So now I read on to you the answer, then you understand. I told him, yes, I think your question is very relevant. I used to answer this type of question in a very straightforward manner, because people may not understand. And when I answer this way, they thought, wow, what is this guy trying to say? What does it mean when he say all this? Because to me, I said, it's not whether you are a lay person or whether you are a Sangha member. It is you as an individual. If you are sincere and have the will and determination to develop this understanding, then you can do it, and you will diligently do it, and then your five spiritual faculties can be developed very fast. Understand what? But if it's just an excuse that as a lay person I have got no time, then it's very difficult. Many people used to procrastinate. You know what they say? Cannot now. I still need to work. I still got a lot of responsibility. I need to wait. Wait till when I retire. Then after they retire again, they say no time. They got a lot of things to do. Grandchildren to look after. They need time to travel, to do their thing. Then later, too old to meditate. Got a lot of sickness, a lot of problem. And then only think of meditation. So these are the problem. Then I continue. I said, remember the last time I came here to give a talk on understanding life, its meaning and purpose. I said, when you are very young, you got a lot of time, a lot of energy. but you got no money. That is the problem. Then later on, as you grew up, you go and work. You have got a lot of money because you work very hard. But then you got no time because you spend all your time working for money. True or not? Yeah? True or not? Very true for most people. Isn't it? Even though you still got energy at the time, and you can really live and enjoy life. But then you say, after I retire, only I enjoy life. Or I meditate. Then when you retire, you have got a lot of time. And a lot of money. But you got no more energy. And that's not. That time a lot of sickness. A lot of health problem. Mental problem. Then you say, "Ayo, I should have enjoyed my life when I was young." So that word "should" is not a reality anymore. Then I say, coming back to meditation is quite similar, isn't it? When you are young and working, you will give the excuse by saying, "No time. Now too busy because I need to work every day 9 to 5 plus. So where got time? But then who say you need to work? But then who say need to work cannot meditate? The Buddha already explained to us the domain of meditation. That is, meditation can be done in any posture, any time, any place, and anywhere, under any circumstances. To develop the spiritual faculty, do you need to be a monk? You don't need, isn't it? The faith in the Buddha and his teaching is through your own reflection and contemplation. If you are serious about life, like what happened to me, when I was also a layman or a layperson back then, I was also married with 2 kids, and yet I cultivate full-time, non-stop. And it can be done, because this daily mindfulness can be done, heedfulness. So never allow yourself to allow the thought to create the excuse for you to be heedless. Because a lot of people listen to their thought and allow the thought to justify. We are saying, okay, wait till when I retire, I will go full-time. Very convincing. Then later on, the thought will say, I still cannot retire because I still got not enough money to retire. And moreover, my children still need me. And they still depend on me for support. It is common to hear this nowadays, isn't it? Because initially, you will say they need me to fund their tertiary education. Then after they come back, they get married. They still depend on me, you say, because they need me to pay the first down payment or deposit for their first home. Otherwise, they cannot afford to buy. And then after that, you may say your grandchildren also depend on you. Then where does it end? You listen to this part. Life is to be developed through understanding and live. So if you give priority to life, then your focus will be different. To me, if I don't understand life, I would rather not live. I will not come to this world. If I want to come, I must come with the understanding of life, so that I know how to live, so that my life is more meaningful. Understand? You don't come here to worry about life and develop all the delusion and get yourself entangled and become miserable over life. Then why do you come? Like during our recent Cameron Highland retreat, this one referred to Brother Tay, he is here. And some of those who went, they came to realize life was so meaningful and beautiful when they were up there. They were known because at the retreat, they experienced that big difference between heedful living and heedless living. Those who are heedful, they are so peaceful, so mindful and aware, awake and relaxed. No need to worry about life or anything else. But how come when you come back to your daily life or routine or society, your problems and your worries start again? It is because you have become heedless again, and your thoughts start to proliferate again. All of the things that you are concerned about, like your business, your career, your health, your relationship, your problems and daily routine, etc., through memories, everything starts to come back and haunt you again. Then your fear, your worry, your anxiety, etc., will start to manifest again. So why must life be this way? It is because you don't understand life. You had allowed your thought to heedlessly create and project via your self-delusion and ignorance to arise all the suffering, mainly because you grasp and cling and give meaning to so many things that has arisen within the phenomenal world. That's how you project your own fear, your own worry, your own anxiety. You project into the future to arise the fear, and you recall the unhappy past. And you recall the unhappy past, which are your scars of memory. Then you never live life, because you are never with the moment to understand the reality of life and existence that will unfold to you, the secret of life, so that you know how to live. To be with the moment and at peace with everything, to experience all of the beauties and wonders of life, that's really life. There is no more problem in life if you understand. You only have to perceive everything as the way it is, with wholesomeness, without negativity. Understanding the reality of what is, which is the reality. And don't try to create the opposite via wanting things your way. They're not able to accept the reality of the moment that is the cause of suffering, according to the Buddha. So the cultivation is actually very simple, just like what the Buddha had taught us. First is to cultivate the five spiritual faculty, and this one you can do through your puja, pre and post puja. This one you listen, next sentence. Every morning have a good religious routine. When you wake up, pay respect, triple jam, develop the chanting. Chant the salutation to the Buddha or whatever bodhisattva that you have affinity with. Then you take refuge and you renew your five precepts, and then you meditate for about 30 to 45 minutes. If it's not on the weekend, you need to go to work, then reduce it to 10 to 15 minutes or so, okay. This is how you train your mind to develop sati or mindfulness. That is, as you pay respect, you develop mindfulness. And then as you calm and compose your mind, you develop the faith, or what they call sadha. Then from there, you reflect and contemplate on the nine great virtues of the Buddha and how wonderful his teaching is. Then you determine strongly to cultivate diligently. Then virya, which is a type of spiritual zeal or tenacity, will arise. So once you have these two, then you silence your mind to develop mindfulness or sati via your bowing, sitting, standing, walking, and lying down posture. All of your four posture, then you stabilize it through anapanasati, etc. Then after that, via your daily life, you connect all the movements between the four posture to cultivate the daily mindfulness, which is sati sampajana. Don't try to be aware, but instead just silence your mind, and you will be aware naturally. This is a very important understanding. The moment you are quiet, silent, don't chatter, you're already aware. Don't try to be aware. The trying is by the thought. But initially, when the hindrances are too strong, you only need to develop the spiritual faculties to counter them. Then if you really want to meditate, you have to decondition this heedless thinking, we are applying the appropriate skillful means like mind sweeping method, metta, etc. that I have taught you all. That book, the blue book, the 12th of September 2013 transcript on understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha. I think only those who came for the Thursday class meditation, they got the book. is all very clearly explained in that book. Those are the book I gave out just now. Then for those who don't have, you can collect a copy on your way out. To decondition your heedless thinking, you had to initially do the mind sweeping method combined with metta from your forehead down. You know how to do it, isn't it? You just feel your forehead, silence everything, then relaxes. Then you move on to your eye muscle, and again feel and relax. Then facial muscle do the same. Then you radiate love or metta to develop the wholesome mind, the inner well-being. That is the inner peace leading to the inner well-being. You can then recite, may I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness within your entire being. And then silence your mind and have more and more moments of this silence to decondition your heedless thinking. Then as you develop this, you just feel and relax, don't think. As you sweep through your whole body, you are actually deconditioned this heedless thinking because it has got no chance to think anymore. Just feel. If there is any tension, any tightness or any stress within, just relax them. Always feel and relax. Don't think. Hence, no more thought, only awareness and silence. So if you do this exercise long enough, you will become very calm and very peaceful. And when you become very calm and very peaceful, sati will develop, will start to develop on its own naturally. And when sati starts to develop, you can stabilize it via anchoring it to an object of meditation, either anapanasati or any suitable object of meditation that you are familiar with. Then finally, when your breathing had become very subtle or quiet, then don't go and do sitting and touching via verbalization again. Instead, you should just silence your mind and stay silent. Then if you can, you move your sati or awareness to your heart area and feel. Just aware. And then see what happens. A lot of things will happen. Then you will develop the stability of mindfulness. Your mind will enter. So this is the meditation part. Yeah? So far clear. I think by now it's very clear. Yeah? So you can do this. You're already very good. Yeah? Then I read on. When your mind enters sati, you technically don't need the object of meditation to become mindful anymore. The object of meditation is just a skillful means to anchor your mind so that your mind does not heedlessly wander off. That's why anapanasati is awareness of the in and out breath. Every time it wanders off, bring it back. Every time it wanders off, bring it back until this mind is trained. So that this heedless habitual thinking and reaction of mind doesn't happen anymore. That's why after some period of training, sati will arise. And then it becomes kanika samadhi, moment-to-moment awareness or mindfulness. Then when it stabilizes further, until it becomes continuous, no more thought, then it will become upajara samadhi. When your samadhi stabilizes, but not in absorption yet, at the threshold of going to absorption, it becomes continuous, but it's not in absorption. Yeah. So this one is upajara samadhi. Then there is no more thought because the mindfulness is continuous. That's why you can develop the spacious awareness or specific phenomenal awareness. Your awareness and the phenomena move as one without thought. Yeah. You can only do that after you have trained your mind, after you have developed upajara samadhi. Otherwise, kanika is still too weak. Kanika is moment to moment, not stable. Then when you have continuous mindfulness, it can then enter absorption and go into apana samadhi. You can experience it. During the early days I did it, I went into it. And I can shut off my sense door consciousness. This hearing consciousness, I can shut it off. When I got into this absorption state of Appana Samadhi, this energy field can shut off the hearing consciousness, and that is why I cannot hear anything. Then, like completely cut off. They call this Chitta Vivika, means the mind enters seclusion. The senses, they can cut off. Yeah. Then they develop what they call inner peace. That is mental seclusion. But this one cannot live life. So this type of peace is not reliable. Then after that, they got the three type of peace. Kaya Vivika, Chitta Vivika, and Upadi Vivika. Yeah. So the rest, I leave it to you all to go back and read. Because these are not so much about meditation. It's more for understanding. Yeah. Maybe I just finish it off, since we still have time. Or I still have a lot of time. You hear of these three words, isn't it? Kaya Vivika, Chitta Vivika, and Upadi Vivika. You know what is Vivika? Vivika is renunciation or seclusion. Kaya Vivika is physical seclusion or physical renunciation. Meaning as a monk, when you enter monkhood, you actually renounce the world, you give up everything. Your wealth, your property, your relationship, your whatever, and you renounce them all. Then after that, you seclude your mind. You go into what they call Appana Samadhi, which means you go into concentration or one-pointedness, concentration and absorption to seclude that mind from external world. And there is mental seclusion or renunciation. The mind doesn't want to come out into the world. That's why it is peaceful within or inside. So this is called mental seclusion or Chitta Vivika. The first type of peace comes from renunciation of physical thing, and this type of peace is dependent on the environment. If the environment is peaceful, the setting is peaceful, then you are peaceful because you are conditioned by environment. Also, after you have renounced and given up on all the materialistic things that may make you restless and stressful, we are becoming a monk. Then you become more peaceful. Because you go into a secluded place, a monastery, which is more conducive. Also because everybody there keep their precept. So this physical renunciation or seclusion will bring about a type of peace called Kaya Vivika, that will enable you to cultivate much easier. Then you develop seclusion of mind by going inside. The mind dwells inside and doesn't come out because it is very peaceful. But this one cannot live like. You are trapped inside. It's energy field. It's a conditioned state. And then you enter Appana Samadhi. But the Buddha said the most important peace is the third type of peace, born of wisdom. Not through secluding yourself. They call it Upadi Vivika, a type of peace that can arise. We are cultivating insight or vipassana meditation, leading to the awakening. When you awaken, you will realize the truth and you are no longer deluded and your mind liberated. That type of peace, you can live life anywhere, any place, any time. You are always at peace no matter what happened to the world. For the world is the world, and people are just the way they are. You are always at peace with the world, because you know this form and mind is not you. You and everything that arises, they are conditioned arising, causal phenomena, empty with no reality. And they follow nature's law, exhibiting their three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state and non-self, or anicchang, dukkhang, and anatta. Then you will also know the most important law that governs life and existence are the law of karma and the law of mind or dependent origination. And via this, you will know how the mind works and functions and how to use it to develop the appropriate wisdom or wholesomeness of mind so that you can follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil to good and then purify the mind until it becomes enlightened. And this is how you train your mind to develop the wisdom to live life. As a layperson, it can also be done. And what you need is to develop the spiritual faculty of sadha, virya, leading to sati. train via the mind supreme method to decondition the heedless thinking, then develop the spiritual faculty of sati. And when sati stabilizes, samadhi will come about to enable you to see things as they are. And then you will be very heedful, calm and peaceful throughout the day. With this upacara samadhi, to make your mind collected and unwavering. And you no need to think like before anymore. Your mind is so different now, because most of the time you are just aware, relaxed, peaceful and heedful. And it seldom really need to think anymore. Even as I speak and share this whole 2 hour of Dhamma talk with you all, I hardly think. At times, I only need to recall from memory those facts and words that I need to use in the sharing, like recalling the title of the talk, some of your name, etc. But because I am very familiar with this type of Dhamma sharing, it has become a part of me, and I don't have to think, because if I have to think, I cannot share. Because all this come out from my understanding that is straight from the heart or nature within. It's not from memory. So I hope I have answered your question. Even as a lay person, don't be discouraged. I do understand sometimes you become gullible because you always hear people say, and sometimes they are very convincing too. I remember during the early days when I was at Brookfield listening to Dhamma talk, and they used to tell me, for us lay people, you just don't have a chance. So don't go and dream. Then they ask why. Because they will tell you, the monks who go full time also cannot do it. So convincing, isn't it? If monk full time also may not be able to do it, then what is your chance, they say. But what is a monk? It's not the one with the rope on, isn't it? It's the one that has the faith and sincerity and the determination to train their mind according to the advice of the Buddha. And that is the true monk. There is a monk. Sorry. It should be that is. A monk is already in you already. If you have the determination. Oh, I think it should be there is a monk. And it's in you already. Means your nature. If you have the determination to cultivate the spiritual faculty and develop the meditation diligently, because meditation can be cultivated in the midst of life. And meditation, as explained by the Buddha, can be cultivated by any human being as long as it has a form and mind. Then it can develop the understanding. And for human beings, it is easier because we live in the world where there is suffering and the possibility of enlightenment. There are these two extremes. And because our human mind is also very unique, because it can be developed until it can become a Sammasambuddha, the fully enlightened one, on one extreme. But via heedlessness, it can also go to the other extreme and fall into avijja hell. So all this are what the human mind is capable of. So our rhyme is a very special rhyme, and they call it the sensual rhyme of happiness, Kamaloka Sukkati. Sukkati is happiness, Kama is sensual, and Loka is rhyme. Ours is considered as a happy rhyme, whereas the other four rhymes below us are termed the Wufu rhyme. They are the demon rhymes, the Peta, the animal, and the hell rhyme. These are the four suffering rhymes called Kamaloka Dukkati. In this rhyme, they really suffer. Demons have a lot of anger, and they suffer a lot too. Animals are born into the animal rhyme because of their delusion. Hungry wolves or petas, they are full of greed and delusion. And the hell beings, they have all the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then I say, okay, so shall we end? Then they rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So this one is a very good explanation that you can benefit from. And you can really, really read through it again and again to develop the clear understanding. It will give you a lot of faith and understanding, and you can penetrate the Dhamma very, very easily. So this book is very useful. Now we come to the second one, your notes in front of you. Understanding lying down meditation. This was based on a question by Sister Susan from Klang. We were having this 9-6 Patreon Platform Sutta class. At the end, she asked this question. Then Sister Lee got one of the Kayamita's mother, Queenie Ku, to help did up the transcript. Actually, you all should thank her. Because if she don't do up the draft, this transcript will not come out. And I also forgot about it. I didn't know I spoke so much thing when I answered her question. Even though she is new, the mother, Queenie. You see, the mother followed the daughter and the son-in-law to come to the Tuesday class. Then the mother and the daughter end up in the Sunday class too. So they have a lot of faith. And the mother is quite elderly, older than me. I don't know how old, I didn't ask. But definitely older than me. So what happened was her Dhamma was not very, very deep. She don't have much depth in the understanding. But given her condition, able to come out with that transcript was already very good, the draft. Although there were quite a bit of mistakes, but don't worry, well, she tried. Then when I read the first draft, I tell myself, this is not what I spoke. So I quickly go and look for the recording. Then when I listen to the recording, then only I understand. You know, some word, the pronunciation, according to her, she think is this word, no? Energy field. You know what she write? Energy was correct, but the field become F-E-E-L. So I read, energy field. I say, what is this? I never talk with her. Then I check the recording. Oh, energy field. Then corrected. Then many, many other areas also. But then no problem, because she is very sincere and she did it. I asked her, what made you want to do it? She said, Miss Lee asked me to do. But she was very, very patient. So we should thank her. Sadhu her. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, now I will read to you. Question by Sister Susan. This is especially useful for those who are already quite good in the meditation. And you want to develop the ability to do the lying down meditation. This is very useful. And also for people who wants to go the develop the understanding of the higher teaching about that true nature and all those things. This particular transcript is very, very useful. I read to you, then hopefully we can develop the understanding. The question is brought to you regarding my meditation. I'm aware that when I'm in the lying down posture, I am definitely more relaxed when compared to my sitting. See, those who know how to do, they will know, because they don't fall asleep. During sitting, I'm aware that there is more tension. So should I just continue to lie down every time I want to do the sitting meditation? This was a question. Then I said, it is up to you, because there are time to sit and time to lie down. If you want to train your mind, it's easier to do it while in the sitting posture, because in the sitting posture, you can maintain awareness or mindfulness of the in and out breath, or anapanasati better. Initially, the sitting posture is usually more conducive. But later on, as you develop the ability to have this meditative mind, that is already so quiet, so peaceful, so clear, and so tranquil, which means you have developed the ability to go into stillness of mind, which is sparsity, rather easily. Then when that happens, if you continue with the sitting posture, you will find it very difficult to go into a relaxed state of a free mind, to maintain this state of tranquility and stillness of mind, unless you know how to relax very well. When you have the ability to relax so well, the whole of your body and mind will be in that state of complete relax, even while in the sitting posture. But because of your cross-legged posture, there will be energy build up without you realizing it. When this energy build up restricts the flow of, then this energy build up actually restricts the flow of qi. And that's why during that time you are not so relaxed. And if you can, you should try meditating with the lying down posture. Then the mind that has the ability to become so quiet and so still will become a free mind that is naturally relaxed. Now, this is very important. This is not a conditioned state, not a focused energy field, concentration, meditation. It's not samatha, because it's a free mind. This is the silent mind, pasati, that can develop wisdom, insight. Yeah. This is the mind that can meditate and develop vipassana, understanding. Initially, the mindfulness or awareness is at the anapanasati region, or in and out breath region, until it becomes very subtle. Then finally, one day, it will drop down to the heart or mind base. Then you just stay there. You do anapanasati long enough, finally it will drop to the mind base, heart base. It will stay there. Because this is location which is very near the gateway to your nature. From there, you continue to relax and silen your mind. Then one day, that silent and still pure awareness that is without thought, you have to do it until no thought and no craving, will be able to detect the gateway and go in. The lying down posture is the most relaxed posture, as you have found out on your own. This is a very important posture, because in the lying down posture, you do not create any constriction or restriction in your flow of qi. Then chances of going into concentration is much lower, because this energy cannot build up. If you are in a cross-legged position, all of your energy field and qi, they will be building up without you knowing it. Then from your spinal cord, it can go up to the brain. Then you can push it up to develop all the jhanas. But if you are in the lying down posture, and you know how to relax into it, all this energy, they will not build up. The moment you relax into it, it will stabilize. Then after that, it will become very quiet, very still, until you are very sensitive. During that time, you will come to understand that the lying down posture is the best posture. You can detect the gateway after you have become very quiet and very still. Then all of your yin and yang energy, which you have developed and stored up earlier on, whether via mindfulness or energy field training from your qigong, tai chi, tan tian, yoga, wai tan kong, or whatever energy field related practices, they will all melt into the gateway. And during that time, the meditator or the cultivator, which is the form and mind, that is in that state, will understand. Because all of the yin and yang energy as it go through the gateway will be transformed and purified into pure energy. This is the pure energy that is already wise or intelligent. This one is not thought-based, because there is no thought behind. You just silent, relax, and aware, and the last support is trust. Trust means you trust your nature to do. You don't interfere with your mind, with your thought, with your mental intention. You just silent and don't do anything. Let the nature do itself. No thought involved. Then the pure energy will develop the internal movement without any will or directive, which most people cannot understand because they have never done it before. This is the real opening of nadis and chakra within your internal bodily movements. All this will happen without any thought, without any directive or effort, via mental intention from the thought, which means there is no will, no effort, and no mental intention involved. And there is also nobody inside there doing, no egoic mind. Understand or not? No thought. So this is the reason why J. Krishnamurti, via his understanding, said, wherever there is a meditator, there is no meditation. You know why? Who is the meditator? Who is the meditator? The thought based people, the thought is actively meditating, understand now. I want to know, I want to know. Is this jnana, is this jhana? Am I doing it correctly? Am I experiencing insight? What insight? So that mind, which is egoic, is so busy, understand now. So wherever there is a meditator, there is no meditation. That's why there is no thought in real meditation. The real meditation is just silent. Nobody inside there. That's why it's anatta. Then Krishnamurti also go on to say, wherever there is effort, effort means what? Exercise of a will, a mental intention or a craving to do something, there is no meditation. Because no thought, no will involved. It's just silent, relax, and let that nature do. All this, the cultivator will come to understand them very clearly. When this transformation happens, your mind will become very still. When this transformation happens, your mind will become very still, very quiet, and very tranquil, very fast. Then after that, you can even maintain the state of awareness or mindfulness in the midst of life, midst of your daily life, very easily. The reason being, by the time you can detect the gateway, you must have already progressed very far in your meditation. And you must have already touched your true mind or nature. You already, like Hui Ning and the other great beings, understood what the true mind is. You have to connect to understand. You have to go through that glimpse of cessation, pusan, pumia, no arising, no ceasing, no movement at all. Even one moment of that pure cessation is very, very powerful, very penetrative. Technically, you already awaken, enlightened, change your lineage. So the key to understanding meditation is posture is not critical. You can use any posture, even in the Satipatthana Sutta or Four Foundation of Mindfulness Sutta, it stated that all the four postures, standing, sitting, walking, and lying down, you can use them to meditate. But the real wisdom or insight come from meditation in daily life. After you have developed all the ability to be peaceful, to be quiet, to be aware, and to be heedful, then you will come out into life and apply this mind state, which is awareness or mindfulness, to insight into phenomena, to insight into the three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state and non-self, via the direct seeing to penetrate the Dhamma. Later on, to reflect and contemplate via the second turning of the Four Noble Truths, to prepare the base for receiving truth. Then after that, any of the three turning, either first, second, or third turning, they can awaken your nature. Because by then, most of the time, you are aware, silent, and heedful. Then it can trigger off the awakening anytime. After you have this initial wisdom, only then can you cultivate the real Noble Eightfold Path and the Four Foundations of Mindfulness in a more refined and deeper manner. After you have developed all this understanding born of daily mindfulness, you can lie down and do your meditation again. By then it will be very different because during that time you will understand very clearly and you will know what to do. Then you will understand that the lying down meditation has its purpose and function because to realize the more stable Nibbana, you need to the formal posture, and the lying down posture is the most conducive. There are two types of awakening. The first type is via the sainthood way in daily life, whereby the realization of Nibbana is just a glimpse or a moment of cessation of form and mind. Those realized by the Sotapanna, first stage of sainthood, and the second stage of sainthood, Sakadagami. Then there is a second type of awakening that is more stable and lasts longer. Those realized by the Anagami, or third stage of sainthood, and the Arahant, the fourth stage of sainthood, and the other great beings. For the first two stages of sainthood, the cessation happens only for a moment, or momentarily for one moment of cessation only. But that's good enough, because that itself is the realization of Nibbana. That moment is enough to awaken, especially the Sotapanna shape and Sakadagama shape, Sakadagami shape, sainthood way. And this can happen in the daily life. While cultivating the daily mindfulness, one doesn't need to be in the form of meditative posture. But for Anagami and Arahant onward, usually they will have to go into cessation for a longer period. To realize this second type of awakening, one need to be in a more stable form of meditative posture. During the early days, most of them do it in their daily life via the first and second turning of the Four Noble Truths. That is, via hearing the sutta followed by contemplation and reflection, and inquiry into what the Buddha has proclaimed or taught. Then there are some who develop samatha meditation first via going to jhana. And there is a reason why they like the sitting posture, which is more conducive. But later on, they still have to release their energy field and return to normal awareness and go into daily mindfulness to develop the initial wisdom via insight into the three characteristics of nature to realize the enlightenment. Then after that, they will sit again and go into the form of meditation to realize the more stable cessation. Then sitting can also awaken them. During the time of the Buddha, a lot of his disciples does it in the sitting posture. But later on, those who understand, they will come to understand that the lying down posture is in fact more conducive. That is also the reason why the Buddha, during his Parinibbana, he was in the lying down posture. Then whenever he rests, he was also in the lying down posture. This lying down posture was seldom taught because most living beings don't have the ability to meditate that way. If they are not trained, they tend to fall asleep very fast. Then it becomes sleeping meditation. So your meditation becomes sleeping meditation and no more lying down meditation anymore. That's the reason why it was not taught, because few people can do it. Very few people can do it. And because of that, it was hardly taught. But for those who understand, they will know. The moment you can do the lying down meditation, you are already a very good and advanced cultivator. Lying down posture has its purpose. It is needed when you are developing the second type of awakening. When you go into this so-called cessation of form and mind to realize Nibbana, in the lying down posture, you can develop it much more easily. You can go into it very much faster, and you can stay there for quite a while. Then it depends. If you are ready and about to do it, you have to develop some form of tactfulness, because you have to let those who are around you understand what you are doing. Otherwise, they may think you already did. This is very true. Don't play a fool. When you are about to do it, you better let people know. When you go into this cessation, you are really like a dead person. The only difference between you and a dead person is you won't become very cold, like the corpse, the dead corpse. You won't become like the dead corpse. Your body will not rot, and your body will not emit those foul smells. But you really got no heartbeat, no brain activity, and everything else also ceases. No more activity, no more consciousness, nothing. The whole body and mind is like no different from a dead person, except that the stillness, pure energy of Nibbana, they are still within the form. And because that being is in that state, so in order to prevent any confusion, it is advisable to let people know, so that when you go into it, people will understand. But as far as I know, you don't have to worry so much, because it is not easy to go into that state for a long period of time. It depends on your past cultivation, it depends on your understanding, and it also depends on how skillful you are. And most of these cultivators, when they go into this cessation, they will know how to come out. It is automatic, but you cannot predict when to come out, because it is the unconditioned. You can only come out at the time when the conditions are there for it to come out. So all these are part and parcel of lying down meditation. And lying down meditation is only to be done after you have trained your mind very well. After you have developed the paucity enlightenment factor until your mind is very stable and very still. And after your daily mindfulness has stabilized. then you will come to understand why this lying down posture is the most relaxed, conducive, and appropriate posture. And then you can do it. Especially at night when you are at home, you have to learn to meditate in the lying down posture so that you can rest very well, so that when you arise the next day, you can become very fresh and mindful. The other reason is because human beings spend almost one third of their time sleeping, true or not? Yeah? You sleep most of your time. Huh? You sleep 8 hours a day, that is one third of the day. You sleep 6 hours, it's already a quarter of a day. So the lying down posture meditation, if you can understand and develop the ability to meditate in that way, it will help you a lot. It can help speed up your cultivation. So you don't have to like keep on complaining, ayo, throughout the day, I spend one third of my time sleeping. Yeah? Then maybe the other third is spent on doing your household thing or worrying about your life and running after your whatever. Then you got hardly much time to relax. Then you have to eat every day, 3 meals a day. Yeah? Then you got to do your business, to go and wash up and clean yourself. So you spend a lot of time actually doing all these things. So if you cannot develop mindfulness when you do all this, I ask you one question. How can you meditate? Understand? Not? That's why meditation has to be done in the midst of life. Under any circumstances, you must have heedfulness. Then you can meditate, even while answering nature's call. If you cannot do that, means you are heedless most of the time. And according to the Buddha, the heedless are as if dead. So this type of formal meditation can be done anytime, even when you are resting. And finally, if you want to understand what is 24-hour meditation, you have to be skillful in the lying down meditation first, and then you will come to understand that you can be mindful throughout the day, and 24-hour meditation is possible. I can share this with you all because this nature of mine had done it before during the early days of its cultivation. So it's all up to you. Don't worry about the posture. Whichever posture that is most or more conducive to you, use it. You only need to understand your meditation focus by inquiry. Do you still need to train your mind? You have already stabilized it and no need to train your mind anymore, then by all means, whatever posture will also be suitable for you because by then, your spiritual faculty are already established. Means you have your spiritual faculty, the hindrance is at bay, understand not? Then you no need to train, understand not? You only train when your hindrance are still there, when your spiritual faculty are not developed. Since you have already trained your mind, means your spiritual faculty already developed, hence you can meditate via a relaxed mind. You can silence your mind easily, and then you can develop whatever understanding you want. That's why meditation becomes very simple when the 5 spiritual faculties are in place. Then you will understand very clearly what this form of mind is all about. It is for you to use. So use it to live life, to meditate, to develop understanding, and to cultivate. And it's all up to you. Then whatever posture that is the most suitable and conducive, you will also come to know because by then, very likely, throughout the day, you are already heedful and mindful. So there is no difference between standing, walking, sitting, and lying down. No difference at all. Then meditation becomes like a part of your nature. You are in that state of heedfulness or awareness throughout the day. You don't have to rely on anything else to become mindful. You don't need an object of meditation anymore. Then you will come to realize that all these methods and techniques or object of meditation are only initial skillful means used by cultivators to train their mind. And it has nothing to do with meditation. It is just to train the heedless mind to be mindful, to be heedful. And a lot of people cannot understand this very important point. That's why that day I forwarded one email regarding this to you all recently. You all saw it, isn't it? It was written by a monk from SBS by the name of Pante Kumara. According to the email, he said he had been asked many times and many places about what method or technique of meditation he teaches. He said he has Sorry, he said he don't know how to answer them. And every time he answers them, he finds his answer not so clear and inadequate. Then he came out with one answer which he thought was very good. I will try to get it from the email and read it to you so that we can discuss it. This may be good because this can help clear up a lot of things. That's why even monks and cultivators, they are not so sure and are not so clear about all this. Like what is the meditation as taught by the Buddha and what are method and technique or object of meditation for. So when I read the email, I felt I should share it. I should send it out to all Kayamita for them to develop the reflection and contemplation so that hopefully they can understand better. Let me try to look for it. Okay, I've got it. According to him, he said, this one is from his email. From time to time, I have been asked this question, Bhante, what method do you teach? And I keep having trouble answering it properly. They want me to name it, and I don't have one for it. Usually, I resort to saying, I teach this and I teach that. In that way, it seems like I have a mother way of teaching. Some time ago, it dawned upon me, I don't teach a method, because I'm not interested in that. Instead, I teach people. I show them how to free themselves from suffering in the best way I know for them at that time. Every experienced teacher knows that every student is different. To think that one method fits all is unreasonable. Sometimes I conveniently fall back on some sort of standard method too. And that's when I'm not operating at my best. That's when I'm not using discernment. And the result aren't so good. Results are the best when I drop all ideas of method, pay full attention to the person and let wisdom decide. So I don't want to use any specific method. But whatever method that is suitable, even if I have never used it before, that is one that occurs spontaneously to me, I will use it. So next time, I will know how to answer the question of what method I teach. I try not to teach method. I teach people, posted by Kumara Bhikkhu. So with this, we can open for discussion. What are your views and understanding on this, basing on your cultivation understanding? What are methods and what are techniques? Do you know why he has a problem or not? So at that time, I actually explained to them. If I'm not wrong, he studied Bhayan Kathy's teaching. He has also used Bhayan Kathy's technique or the work based on the four lines of questioning to teach. And he also shared a bit of The Power of Now, a bestseller book written by Eckhart Tolle. And because of that, his student asked him, so what is your teaching? What method do you teach? He can't describe them because those teachings are neither a method or a technique. It is more of an inquiry. With this, I hope you all can have a better understanding of the above topic. Then you look at the appendix. This is how the work recommended by Bhayan Kathy, how it can help many people to come out of depression, to see clearly how their thought play trick on them, how when they believe their thought, they become miserable, they suffer, because that thought project and create fear, wrong thought, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, attachment, clinging, craving, born of self-delusion. But all this teaching, Bhayan Kathy never teach. He only teach you how to question thought. And he teach you how to come out of it because it's a turnaround for people. So these are short-term solution, not permanent fix. Without the Dhamma, there is no permanent fix. So I go through with you quickly. What is the work? The work is simple yet powerful. It's a simple yet powerful process or inquiry that teaches you to identify and question the thought that causes all the suffering in the world. It's a way to understand what is hurting you and to address the cause of your problem with clarity. So what is hurting you is your own thought, the wrong thought. In its most basic form, the work consists of four questions and the turnaround. He said, ask the four questions. The work is meditation. It's about opening up to your heart. Not about trying to change your thought. He never asked you to do that. He said, ask the question, then go deep inside and wait for the deeper answer to surface. This is contemplation. This is meditation. Investigate each statement from these four questions. He will ask you to write down what your thought tells you. Yeah? And the best example he normally gives is relationship problem. So when your spouse want to break up with you and all those things, or you think your spouse is cheating on you, then you become very, very jealous, very angry, very unhappy. Then your thought will tell you a lot of things. Last time you call him honey, my sweetheart, and all those things. Now, that bastard, the word change. Then the thought will say, how can he do all this to you? You trusted him so much. You sacrificed so much for him. You helped him to build up his business. Then after he made all the money, he did that to me. Then you felt like very unhappy, very angry, very miserable, full of jealousy, full of hatred, full of anger. So when that emotion arise, Bhayan Kathy say, you come and do his work. This is like a workshop. No? You go in and write it down and question those thoughts. No? Then he said, first question, very simple. What the thought tell you? Is it the truth? He said. Just answer yes or no. You will sure answer yes. Yeah? Because the master did all this thing to you. Okay, then he said, can you be absolutely sure that it is the truth? You think, then you say, sure lah, cannot go wrong. I even caught him. caught him red-handed. And all those things. And I got proof. I sent this, what they call, special investigator, or what, private investigator. Follow him, take photo. And I got all the evidence. The phone recording, WhatsApp recording. Then he said, okay, fair enough. Then the third question will make you wake up. How do you react and what happened to you when you believe those thoughts? Means when that thought arises and you believe. It conditions you into so much anger, hatred, jealousy, and unhappiness. Isn't it? It makes you miserable, isn't it? What are all those evil roots of greed, hatred, delusion? And this is the one that makes you miserable, evil, and you suffer so much. And when you have all this evil root, you become evil and you hit back. You want to take revenge. You just no more love, no more compromise, nothing. You say, I want to teach him a lesson. I want to make sure he learned his lesson. No more sweetheart, no more honey that time. Then you say, well, that's why you can recall the phrase, never make a woman angry. They will chop you into 18 pieces. They can do anything when they are angry. So this is the case. Like the Buddha said, all these are wrong thoughts, understand? Thought that condition your anger, your fear, your misery, your unhappiness, your evil roots. All these are wrong thoughts. These are evil roots. Make you miserable, make you suffer. That's why when you deludedly attach and cling and hold on to this thought, believe it, you become miserable. Self-delusion, conditioned suffering. But Bhayan Kathy don't explain this way. He just asks you this question. How do you react? And what happened to you when you believe the thought? Then you realize you become so miserable. Then the fourth question turns you around. Who would you be without this thought or before this thought come? You were so happy, so peaceful. You love your spouse so much. Is it worthwhile sacrificing for him? Because he's such a responsible husband. Such a nice husband. Believe my birthday. And took me to nice places for dinner and all this thing. But the moment this thing happens and the thought comes, you will become so miserable. Yeah. So this is what she will tell you, your life. You decide how you want to live. You believe the thought, you die. So that's why he, towards the end, she said, I discovered that when I believe my thought, I suffered. But that when I don't believe them, I didn't suffer. This is the turnaround. And that this is true for every human being, you know, she came to realize. Freedom is as simple as that. I found that suffering is optional. Like the Buddha said, suffering need not be the third noble truth. Enlightenment in the here and the now can happen. I found a joy within me that has never disappeared, not even for a single moment. That joy is in everyone, always, according to Byron Katie. And to have that joy, what must you do? Yeah? Yeah? You must be a lover of what is. So that part is very important. Okay. People who do the work as an ongoing practice commonly report elevation of depression. They find resolution in their problem. They even become happier. They find happiness in situations that were once very miserable or debilitating. Then decrease stress, live with less anxiety and fear, improve relationship, experience deeper connection with and intimacy with their partners, with parents, with children, with friends and yourself. Reduce anger and fear, understand what makes them angry and fearful. Increase mental clarity, able to work more efficiently and intelligently with integrity. Then they have more energy, they experience a new sense of ongoing vigor and well-being. Then they have more peace, discovering how to become a lover of what is the reality. Which means he always say, like the Buddha said, accepting as they are, don't go against. So when you can accepting as they are, means you are a believer of what is, which is the reality of the moment. So if your spouse already decide to be like that, even if you want him to change, end of the day, it is not the same anymore, understand, after what you have gone through. So you have to accept them for what they are, like I used to share with you all. The Buddha says, seeing things as they are, not through delusion. He is what he is, form and mind. Deluded people do deluded things. Selfish people do selfish things, understand? Angry, emotional people do emotional things. They are just the way they are. You accept them for what they are, you will be beautiful. Then all this become like easy to confront, easy to come to acceptance. Then easy for you to resolve your problem and move on. What you need to do is to maintain patience, clarity of mind, calmness, not to react, not to stir, not to create unnecessary self-identity, self-delusion, thinking that they are real, then grasp, cling and react and become miserable. Calm yourself down like that day. If this is burning you and tormenting you, don't go and hold and think about it and worry about it. Understand? Put it down and ask yourself, what has happened? What is the reality? When you put it down, means what? You don't get angry. You don't stir your mind. You don't react. You don't become miserable. Understand? There is no fear, no worry. You're just silent. Then you find out. What happened? Oh, he has changed. Then you write it down, understand? He is what he is, understand? Okay, accept, at peace. Then, how can I move? Understand? How can I resolve this amicably so that he is happy, I'm happy? Otherwise, you know what happened. You know what happened. This will continue. Then it becomes coming, understand? This lie you hate. Next lie, he become victim. Then, you become the one that do to other people, or you may be the same person, depend. Then all this will continue. Whatever you do to people, you reap what you sow. do good begets good, do evil begets evil. That's why the Buddha said, contemplate on the law of karma, the fifth contemplation, every day. You are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. So when you understand all this, then you ask yourself, do I want to allow all this karmic negativity and delusion to continue to haunt my life and make me miserable? If you don't want, ask for forgiveness. Chop it off. Then determine to follow the advice of the Buddha. Then resolve each and every matter with wisdom, with understanding, following Noble Eightfold Path. Resolve it amicably so that you are incapable of negativity, so that in future it will not come back as karmic friction or repercussion. Then you need to solve all this, resolve it once and for all. Because when you understand, you will wake up. Because this is like what I used to tell some of the Kayamita, you are playing a game of suffering. In Mandarin, they say, 玩痛苦的游戏. You are playing the game of suffering. When you develop the anger, the hatred, and the evil root, not only you become miserable, your spouse also miserable, your children also afflicted, your loved ones, your parents, your in-law, your brother, sister, and those who have relationship with you, care for you and concern for you, they are also being dragged in. So is that life? Why do you want to make life into so make life so complicated and create so much suffering everywhere? For me, if I can see all this happening, then I tell myself, this game of suffering, I don't want to play anymore. You tell your husband, if you want to play, you continue to play. I don't want to play. You go and find other women and play some more. End of the day, you will become miserable. Yeah, as you grow old, later on, many things will happen. And coming, when they come. So, if you see clearly, you step out of it. Then, you follow the advice of the Buddha. Then, you avoid all evil, do good. You purify your mind. Then your life take a turn. Everything will fall into place. All this karmic negativity will cease to be. Then your life will become beautiful. Then you will encounter beautiful things. That's why you will get to live life, to experience all of the beauty and wonders of life, and you become beautiful. And you don't have to suffer for no reason. You don't have to worry about life. You can just train your mind to have this quality of heedfulness, to be with the moment, to experience all of the beauty and wonders of life, and to truly live life to the fullest, with no more delusion, no more thought projection, no more fear, no more worry, no more wrong thought. And this is what the Dhamma is all about. Then, finally, before we finish, that's why I say Bhayamkhati is not a full solution, it's a partial solution, but can help many people. But if you have the Dhamma to complement, you will have a permanent fix. Then when you wake up, you will have to ask yourself, what can I do? If I know that these are wrong thoughts, because many people tell me, even though they know that it's wrong thought, they say they cannot do anything about it, correct or not? True or not? They say, until I know it's wrong thought, it's making me miserable. But it keep on coming back and haunt me. What can I do? Yeah. Based on the Dhamma you have understood, what can you do? Understand it is very important. So how can you understand it? What did the Buddha teach? If you know that these are wrong thoughts that condition your fear, misery, suffering, and all those things, what must you do? You must abandon it, isn't it? Clear not? This comes from the four right effort. Understand not? That's why you must apply the four right effort. The first right effort is abandon the arisen wrong thought. Understand not? Means arisen wrong thought. When you are mindful, you saw this coming. And like Sabba Asava Sutta, what does it say? Things that are unfit for attention, don't pay attention. Otherwise, the asava will increase. Understand? The existing will flourish. will become more and worse. The unarisen one will rise. So abandon this wrong thought. Then later on, develop wisdom and understanding and mindfulness to prevent it from arising. So second right effort is prevent the wrong thought from arising. Then third one is what? Cultivate the wholesome thought, the right thought that are still not in you. Understand not? Right effort to cultivate the right thought that are still not in you. Not in you. Then the last one is what? To refine upon it and perfect it. Upon it and perfect it. Means all this right thought, you must refine upon it, then you must perfect them. Upon them. So this four right effort is very important. Apart from the four right effort, what else did the Buddha teach? The five ways to overcome unwholesome thought. Remember? These are all in the Heart Sutta notes. Five ways to overcome unwholesome thought or wrong thought. Thought or wrong thought. And what are the five ways? First one is what? Think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. Understand not? So when there is anger, hatred, that's why you must do loving kindness, metta. That's why every day when you wake up, early morning, radiate a radiant smile. Smile to yourself. Be happy. Have joy. Then wish all beings well and happy. You want to wish yourself also can. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy. Then whoever you see, even a bird, or a dog, or a cat, or anybody, you radiate love and metta to them. May you be well and happy. Then you just smile. When you have this joy, this wholesomeness, your negative thought will slowly, slowly diminish. Because this is your new way of living. Otherwise, if you are not careful, you can find out for yourself. Most of the time, throughout the day, most living beings, they are very unhappy. You can't even see them smile. They are like very serious, like a lot of problems in their mind. Then go to office, also not happy. See people also. People acknowledge you also. Like no mood. Whereas if you are happy, you are in the mood, you say, yeah, morning. Then you can joke, you can have joy. Then actually you should be the one that actually responded and make people feel good. So the first one is very powerful. Think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. But most of the time, this one, people cannot make full use of it because they don't know how to develop this inner well-being and inner peace and happiness. They don't know how to develop this third right effort to cultivate the right thought that are still not in you. You must cultivate all the wholesomeness, the virtue, like sympathetic joy, sadhu. Then loving kindness, wishing people well-being and happiness. Then generosity, gentleness, pleasantness, sincerity, kindness, respect, contentment. All this you must learn how to cultivate. When you are contented, you are very happy. Understand? No matter what happened, like recently, Chui kena snatched teeth. She got so much understanding. She did not react, and she was not at all affected. And she accept the reality of it, and she can confront it, and she came out so beautiful. And this is the third time she's having it. But not snatched teeth. He landed in hospital three times. And every time it turned out to be a blessing in disguise. Then the next one is what? think of the consequence or danger of holding on to all these wrong thoughts. Well, these are evil root, root of all evil, make you miserable, suffer. Have you had not enough of all this? If you have enough, wake up. This is something that will make you miserable. You had enough of it, especially those in depression. And you tell yourself, I don't want this. I have a choice, my life. So if I don't want this, I must abandon all this wrong thought. I must learn how to live life. I must learn how to reverse all this heedless way of living life, leading to all the wrong thought. I must train my mind with the spiritual faculty so that I can have clarity, inner peace, inner well-being to create and cultivate right thought. You must have that sadha and virya and determination. Then cultivate the four right effort. Then when you determine to abandon, you can do it. Because you see the danger. You see the importance of developing this ability. Then after that, this is temporary, you know, the first two ways, still thought-based. What is the third way? Yeah? Third way is what? Meditative one. You just silence your mind and be with this thought. Understand? Not? When you silence, you don't allow it to move. What happened? It will cease to be. Understand? Not? Whether anger, fear, worry, or anxiety, next time when it happens to you, you just silent. Sit on an armchair, relax, silent. Like Krishnamurti said, the very flowering of that emotion, that thought, is the very ending of that thought. And the moment that thought ends, you realize, hey, this is what the Buddha meant. These are conditions arising. Through my delusion, I react, stir the mind, and it arises. It becomes so stressful, so much suffering. I can feel it. Then if I stay with it, like the Buddha said, be aware of it, silent. Don't do anything. That's why the real meditation is silent. Then what happened? It will cease to be. All anger will cease to be because they are conditioned arising. All fear will cease to be. All anxiety, sorrow, lamentation will cease to be if you only know how to silence without the thought having its power to project and move. The third way is the most powerful. But third way alone, no real wisdom yet. Partial wisdom. The full wisdom comes from the fourth way. What must you do? Trace the origination of all this wrong thought. How this wrong thought come to be. Then retrospectively reverse it. When you trace, if you do the meditation, Dhammanupassana, six internal sense bases and six external sense, you realize it comes from one of your sense door. Either when you see something, hear something, or recall through mind something. These three door are very powerful. It will arise a wrong thought. Then you realize this wrong thought arises because of wrong view. When you don't have the right view. When you cannot accept what happened, what is. When you react to what is, you become miserable. When you cannot get what you want. That's why you become angry with your spouse. You develop anger. What they call hatred. And the main thing behind is your fear, your insecurity that he may leave you for another person and all these things. So when all this starts to develop with clarity, your wisdom will arise. Then you realize it's due to your wrong view. So what must you do? Straighten your view to accept them for what they are. Like I said, deluded people do deluded things. Angry people say angry things. Selfish people do selfish things. They are just the way they are. If you accept them for what they are, you are at peace. Doesn't mean you agree with what they do or not. Then you look at the nature's law that governs life and existence. There is law of karma. I don't want to entangle anymore. I want to sever it. I don't want to continue this. What they call game of suffering. I want to come out of it. So when you have all this understanding, you will be able to come out of it. Then when you straighten your view, you realize, like Krishnamurti said, or Vayankati said, you can come to terms with the reality and accept what is. You are always at peace. Because like the Buddha said, whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. And these causes and conditions are mainly coming because of the fifth daily contemplation. So when you accept law of karma, you are at peace. It's just like I explained to many people. Now you complain that your husband did this to you, cheat on you, healthy. But do you know in the past life, you are like your husband did this to other people. That time you never say, how can I do all these things? That time you say, I got money, what? I want to do what I can, what? Why? You jealous, But when karma take its course, you become the victim, then you complain, how can B-A-S-T-A-R come out with that bastard did that to me? See, when you don't see the law of karma, you will not understand. But when you see this, then like most of the lady tell me, got such thing one man, brother? I say, you go and find out yourself. Why happened to you? Don't happen to me and other people. And so, why you got so many of these things happening to you? Why only certain people, not all people? Then they realize, like that, no choice lah. Ask for forgiveness lah. In future, the one lah. Then they start to develop the understanding of the teaching. Otherwise, they still very angry, full of wrong thought, and they become miserable. And a lot of women, ladies, suffer because of relationship. Okay, we better end. Ayo, sorry. Today really, really exceeded 70 minutes. Okay, we better end. We will do the quick one. Sharing our merits with the devas. You want to rejoice, you can rejoice first. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will do the sharing of merit. Quick one. Pali only, no more English translation. Sharing our merits with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu loka sasana itta watta cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo ibmina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nirana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha. Then we end. You don't have to write down any notes. All the notes are in the transcript and the Heart Sutta notes. Okay? Yeah. So you just listen attentively. Always remember.
Dear brothers and sisters in the Dhamma, let us express our gratitude and respect to Brother Teo and Mrs. Teo for coming regularly to this Thursday class to share the true Buddha Dhamma with all of us, very compassionately and with loving kindness and upekkha. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu to Brother Siu Lun for fetching Brother Teo and Mrs. Teo to come to share the Buddha Dhamma with us tonight. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu to Brother Sui An and Sister Mi Fong for inviting us to come to their house to straighten our view through the Buddha Dhamma sharing by Brother Teo. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And we wish Brother Sui An and Sister Mi Fong have a great and fulfilled retreat in Thailand starting tomorrow. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May all of you have a pleasant and safe journey there and come back.
next Thursday class is at Ingbi's house. The address is up there. You will send the waves out. Okay.
Just send it.
Okay.
Just for the information of those who cannot attend today, when they listen to the recording, my house address is at number 43, Jalan SS 18, stroke 5A, A for Apple, Subang Jaya.
Yeah.
And I think on behalf of Sui An, I wish sadhu to all those who bring the
offering items.
It flowers, water, fruits, cakes, and food. Let us express our sadhu to all of them.
Sadhu. Also, the flower that Stephanie brought is from Kayanamita Fan. Sadhu.
Sadhu to all Kalyanamita.
Yeah.
Sadhu. Thank you.